welcome to Rule Breakers and Risk Takers, episode 5 of the podcast. I'm flying solo today without Cherie, but I was very lucky recently to catch up with Mr. Glenn Puxty, our very first interview guest on the podcast. Glenn and I have known each other for many years. You'll hear more about that in the upcoming interview. Makes me feel very old. We talk about how we both escaped our hometown. Glenn ran away to join the Navy, and it's safe to say that changed his life. From nearly getting shot in the Middle East to drinking Cobra rice wine in the depths of Asia, we'll hear all about that. We talk about the death of both of our dads and some pretty silly things we got up to in that time in our lives. They were pretty close together. We reminisce a lot about high school, about what's happened to us since, and Glenn tells us what he's doing now since he's left the Navy. So please enjoy the following interview, and we'll catch you on the other side. To the Rule Breakers and Risk Takers podcast. We're really excited to have you with us. You and I have known each other for, how old are we? 20 years?
32 now, so yes, 20-odd?
Yeah, that feels so old. Even saying I know anyone for 20 years makes me feel like, whoa, that's not possible.
I just worked it out. Yeah, probably about 21 years we've known each other.
There you go.
That's crazy. Terrifying.
Yeah, it is pretty terrifying. Way to feel old to start off the podcast. Awesome.
Yeah. So, any child under 20, you can tune out now.
Yeah.
Or if you want to hear oldies.
We'll start saying things like, back in my day.
Tamagotchis. Super Nintendo.
And the kids are just like, what are they talking about? Yeah, there was no such thing as like smartphones and Pokemon Go. We had to play with tin cans connected by a piece of string.
Especially
in Ipswich, where none of us had any money.
It's now 2017 and they still don't have mobile phones in Ipswich.
Yeah, that's it. Or shoes. We're being really derogatory. Sorry, Ipswichians. For those who don't know, Glenn and I went to school together in Queensland, in Ipswich, and that's how we met. And thanks to Facebook land, really, we get to keep in touch because we can see what's going on with each other no matter where you are in the world, which is all over the place. Well, not really, but sort of. We'll get into that. So
we've seen some stuff.
Yeah. So I want, I guess if we can talk a little bit about you, you're quite a intrepid traveler, really. Maybe, though, if we dial it back and start off with what's your background? What did you do after school? Because no one wants to hear about school. What happened after that?
When
you went out into the big bad world?
Our school life pretty exciting. Like, we had a really fun economics class and a fun chemistry class where we did a great deal of talking and ragging out on the teachers. And I don't know about you, but I didn't duck out to smoke like half our classes. So
no, we were good students,
maybe
really.
You have a secret side.
Yeah. No, I did say to my math teacher in grade 12, I don't need to pass this class, so I'm just going to sit in the back of the room for the rest of the year, but I promise not to disturb the class. Is that okay? And she went, yeah, cool.
and ironically enough, I wanted to. In fact, I needed to pass that class, and I hung out with Maggie. And with our powers combined, we both failed. Yeah.
And I think that's the only class I ever failed, but I just absolutely hated it. And I'm not a maths person, being a writer, obviously. But
how did you pass chemistry? No, hang on. Anyway, we'll move on from.
I enjoy the science, but I don't enjoy the maths. Anyway.
Molecular weight. If anyone knows molecular weight, please email me at glennpuxty@yahoo.com.au. That would be amazing.
Scientists out there, call out. Glenn needs your help.
Yeah, it's been too long. I need answers. Wow. Yes.
All right.
So back to the original question.
Yeah.
Unlike Maggie, I legged it as quickly as I could.
Smart.
Oh, I don't know. Actually, how long did you take before you moved out of Ipswich?
No, I moved out literally about 3 weeks after I turned 18, which was at the end of the school year. So pretty quickly, and I moved to the Gold Coast. So I was out of there pretty much. It took me about 4 or 5 weeks after school finished to organise it, and I was gone, and I've never been back since. Yeah.
Beat me by two or 1 week.
Yeah. I
think it was about the 12th of January or something like that.
Oh, no, I beat you by 10 days.
Well, there you go. Can't remember the date, but it's in January.
Here we are. I'm not competitive, but
I beat you by 10 days 20 years ago. Well, actually, sorry, it wasn't 20 years ago, but anyway.
I left home because I had this awesome employment opportunity to join the Navy on the 2nd of January 2002.
Wow.
So.
And how did that come about? How did you get offered that kind of role? And what was it?
So there's a number of factors. My family is very military. So it's just a family tradition is you just join the military.
Mm.
So my grandfather was in the war. He was an air crewy, mm-hmm. and he flew over the Pacific. His wife, my grandma, she was also a RAFI, and she gassed people because that was her job.
She gassed people?
Yeah, so she was part of, as I get older, I find out more and more about what she did. Now, just going on a tangent, my grandfather accidentally flew through an atomic bomb cloud, and my grandmother deliberately gassed volunteers with different gases in the jungles of North Queensland.
Wow.
So, yeah, so that's a bit of a fun trait to have in your family right from the start.
Yeah.
They both survived the war, which is pretty cool.
That's great.
Dad came about and he joined the Navy himself in 1964.
Mm-hmm.
His brother joined the Air Force a few years later. My dad's pretty much straight after recruit school, he actually got deployed to war. He went to Malaya, Borneo and Vietnam within weeks of finishing boot camp, as what most people call it.
Mm-hmm.
And the way he sold it to me, it was the best time of his life. And he said, nothing can go wrong. And I was like, okay,
wow,
sounds awesome.
Understatement of the century, you liar, Dad.
Yeah, thanks. So there was this whole, there was a bit of a novelty, a bit of daring do adventure.
Yeah.
And so I was pretty much destined to join the military. I guess I would have been called that fascist kid in high school if people knew what that word meant. Like kid drawing tanks and fighter planes on the top of my homework books. It was always in my blood. And then that little thing people might remember called September 11th kicked off. Yeah, that kind of was one of those memorable days, I guess.
Yeah.
And I'd already put my application to join the Navy a few weeks earlier. That one actually got knocked back. I was trying to become an officer.
Mm-hmm.
Thankfully, I didn't become that type of officer because that job sucks.
Mm-hmm.
So any kid wanting to be a seamanship officer, I hope you don't like sleeping. So I ended up tried to be an engineer, and because everyone wanted stokers, as they're called, to man the ships, they just went, hey, you, we're going to fast track your application because we need everybody now.
Mm.
And so, yeah, it was pretty evident. Like, we joined up. Good old George W. said, we're going to fight the Axis of Evil. So I was in recruit school. Everyone got a little bit excited because we're like, yeah, we're going to war. Woo!
Mm.
So we kind of got a bit of a buzz. Now, this is down Cerberus. So for anyone who's been to Melbourne, think of the least glamorous part of Melbourne, and that's where Cerberus is.
Right.
Yeah, so it's south of Frankston. So furthermore, if you've been to Frankston, yeah, you've got a rough idea.
Okay.
It's like Ipswich with a beach, actually.
Right.
So that's how I used to describe it.
Hmm.
It has a nice beach, just wear thongs.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. Yeah. So join the Navy and go to shitholes.
Mm. Well, you're really selling it to me.
Yeah, you should join the Navy too.
I nearly did.
What?
Yeah, I nearly joined. Well, maybe not the Navy. Yeah, that's probably a story for another time. But I got, even though I failed that maths class, I got offered officer entry into, but probably the Army more so. And then they told me to come back in 3 months if I still wanted to, because they were pretty sure I was just trying to run away from a broken relationship, and it turned out they were actually right. So I never went back.
Hang on, I need to talk about this. I've never heard this part of your life.
It's probably a story for another time. But yeah, a brief Yeah, it was very much like, oh, what can I do that will seem really not adventurous, because I wouldn't have called it that at the time, but just like, what can I do to fucking get away from this place and do something that's interesting, you know? And I went in for like general recruitment and I did all the tests and I smashed it at the, what's it called? Not the IQ test,
The aptitude test.
Sorry, I smashed that. And they called me back in. I was a lot smarter back in the day because I was studying. So obviously I can't even remember the word aptitude.
That's cool.
I went in there. They called me back. My recruiting officer called me back and she said, your results are really, like, really good. Why are you going for general entry? Like, you should be going for officer entry. And I went, well, I haven't even finished uni and I failed maths at school, at high school. But my OP was still really good. For anyone who doesn't know what that is, that's your overall position, like your, you know, your grade when you leave high school. That was really good. I just didn't pass maths. And she just wanted an explanation why, I guess. And I told her I didn't need to do that class. I told her the story we were talking about before. And I said, so I just sat up the back of the class the whole year. And she's like, okay, fair enough. Made some notes and said, we're going to put you in for officer entry, but you have to do a psych evaluation first. And so I went off and did that. And the psych evaluator person was basically said, yeah, look, you're not crazy. but
you don't have homicidal tendencies.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I didn't mention the word guns or wanting to shoot people or anything. So she was like, yeah, look, this is great. But I get the feeling you're kind of just running away from something. And I was like, I don't know what you mean. Like, plead ignorance. And they
but
obviously.
That's the entire defense force. You join the defense force to run away from something.
Yeah, right. That's what I thought. Yeah. So maybe it's because I lied about it. I was like, no, I'm not. I don't know what you're talking about. And she said, yeah, she came back. She said, normally the minimum is 12 months. Like, I have to say, you can't reapply for 12 months. No, no, that you have to reapply in 12 months if they turn you down. And she said,
such a bunch of liars.
Yeah, so I don't know. This is probably a few years after you were. That this was probably like 2005, maybe, or 2004. And then anyway, she said, look, come back in 3 months, and if you still want to actually join, then you can, and you can get officer entry. And I never went back, so she was right. Anyway,
could have been a massive life change.
Yeah. Oh, totally. Things would have gone in a 100% different direction. Yeah. So you joined and you did get through, and they fast tracked you basically, right? You were saying, because they needed people so bad, right?
So they fast tracked me so much that they thought that I'd make a really good engineer, and I didn't.
You didn't make a good engineer.
No, because I don't like working by myself and I like to talk to people. And engineers do not talk to other people very much, and they like working in sewage pipes.
Yeah.
And I don't. So there you go.
All right. So what did you do instead?
Because they're Navy.
Oh, right.
Say again.
What did you do instead then? So that didn't turn out.
I became a medic. So, and if anyone who's from school listening to this, you will remember that I almost vomited looking at goats being cut in half. So, yeah. Why I became a medic is it was just almost on a whim. Like, one of my mates went, hey, mate, I see you're not cutting it as a stoker. How would you like to become a medic? And I'm like, you're a cool mate. Okay. And that's how I got recruited as a medic.
Wow.
So I ended up going through all that. Like, it wasn't easy. I was very young. Looking back now, I was pretty immature in a lot of ways. I'd also discovered this thing called freedom, where if it wasn't going to this amazing thing called the pub, I discovered that I had enough money to buy a really cool computer. So I was like this weird geek where I like to socialize with people and drink beer and drink jugs of beer, but I also like going back and gaming on with another geek friend of mine. So it was like this weird time of geeking, drinking, and meant to be studying. I ended up passing, so that's hence why I did 15 years in the Navy. So I must have done something right along the way.
So what was it like? What does being a medic entail in the time that you were?
Things have markedly changed actually in the past 3 years of what a medic will do, but back in back in my day.
There it is.
Yes, there's a lot of admin. We're not going to lie. There's a lot of paperwork involved. Mm-hmm. But you do have, like, so the medic in a traditional shore role will see the patients before the doctors, whether it's out in the field somewhere,
yep,
or within the hospital setting itself. So we're very good at checking coughs, colds, sore holes.
Mm-hmm.
But at my first base, it was all about picking up broken army parachutists who jumped out of a plane, what is it, 6 meters per second fall.
Wow.
From a 500-foot drop.
And so, you have to put them back together again like Humpty Dumpty.
Yeah, pretty much. That's actually a very good way of describing it. It's it's a very enlightening area down in Nowra. So, going on another tangent, I've had the dubious honour of living in both Nowra and Nowra. So, not too many people can claim that one.
Wow.
So,
you win that award, Glenn Puxty.
Oh, yeah. There's one other person who's from Billawheeler and tried to say she's from Nowra. I'm like, no, you're from Billo. I'm from Nowra. You don't win this award. So, sorry about that tangent. that was actually an awful base.
Yeah.
I won't go into the specifics there, but it was a very long 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
It was like great people that I worked with. There were some amazing personalities there. Like things got pretty loose down there. Like we got put into this block, like it's practically made of asbestos. Like it even had signs on the walls saying, caution, asbestos in the walls. And like, so I'm getting put into this room for what reason? Mm. And the only people that lived in there were allegedly men, but we were far from men. there was three levels. Most of us were either medics, spooks, like electronic spies, and Ooh. Aviation repairmen.
Right.
And so it meant that we were all cashed up. We all didn't want to live off the base. We liked to drink. We liked to game. And so the place was just filled with fridges, the biggest subwoofers, biggest TVs at the time, because we lived in this time of cathode ray TVs, and we all had Xboxes and TVs, and the place was just littered with beer cans and LAN cables throughout the whole place. Then people didn't care. People just looked at it and were like, that's a stampier block. Just let them be. That's what we did. It was insane. Like, we were super fit as well. Like, there was this weird thing where we also went to the gym after work.
You weirdos?
I don't know how that was. It was after work. Like, I have beer waiting for me in the fridge.
Yeah, that's beer drinking time.
I know. And I look back and go, how did they convince me to do that? That was pretty much my lifestyle at Nowra for 2 years. It was just insanely like this mix of healthiness and super unhealthiness. Like, like the pizza man knew us by name. Like, it was just mental.
Yeah.
So that was. And also I lived on a guy's couch during that time. I pretty much slept on his couch. Like he lived in another. He actually lived off the base.
Mm-hmm.
And if half the time, like, they'd be like, oh, where's Glenn? Oh, he's not in his cabin. Oh, he must be on Donnie's couch. And that was it. Like, you could come over and I'd be sleeping on his couch. And be like, what are you doing? He's like, sleeping on the couch. Oh, okay. And that was it. That was now.
Interesting.
This is completely different from what actually was going on around me, where you mentioned a very key big word just a moment ago. You said intrepid traveller.
Mm.
And my uncle actually worked for Intrepid Adventures.
Oh, really?
He was a travel leader. And on his last trip with them, he asked me, he asked me if I wanted to go for his last trip. So I was like, you know what? I've got the money.
Yeah.
I'm not doing a great deal other than drinking tinnies and gaming. You know,
admirable pursuit as it is.
as much as I'm benefiting the Defence of Australia doing this, you know what? I'm going to take it on. So actually, in between picking up broken people and socializing hard.
Mm-hmm.
I ended up getting my cash together and got a passport, like got it all rapidly sorted out,
mm-hmm.
and went to Southeast Asia for my first trip. So
nice.
Don't think the boss was too impressed. I think she was a bit surprised that I was actually even leaving the base altogether.
Yeah.
and here I was going, can I go overseas? She's like, oh, when do you want to go overseas? I'm like, it's June and my uncle wants me over there by August. And she's like, oh, okay. And weirdly enough, and looking back now, I'm really surprised that she actually let me go.
Yeah, right.
So, yeah, so I've left the country for 4 weeks and that was the start of my international traveling.
Yeah. And so whereabouts did you go while you were there?
I went straight to Thailand, up to Laos, Vietnam, mm-hmm. and Cambodia.
Awesome. And that's kind of probably a little bit before Vietnam, Cambodia, and Laos, I guess, as well, were really popular like they are today. That's probably before they were trendy.
Definitely well before they were trendy. I think Vietnam was starting to, looking back. Mm-hmm. I remember heaps of people talking about Ha Long Bay and Hoi An,
mm-hmm.
But overall people certainly hadn't heard of, people didn't know Vien Chan or Long Prabang in Laos by any stretch.
Yeah.
It was certainly like just this massive culture shock.
Yeah.
Like as much as we rag out on Ipswich, like we still had Maccas.
Yeah.
Like, wow, that's really sad, isn't it? Like, but that's what I mean. Like, we're so used to everything being there.
Yeah.
And then did this trip, and it started off on a pretty pathetic note. I actually had my credit card eaten on day one.
By the machine?
And it was Queen's birthday holiday, and nobody was going to retrieve it for me.
No.
So I was, thankfully, I'd withdrawn a stack load of cash, like a phenomenal amount of cash.
Yeah.
You're
more organized than me. I never get cash out before I go overseas, and I just pray that nothing's going to happen to my cards.
Yeah. Look, I actually tell people not to do it, and yet the one thing that saved me was doing exactly that.
Yeah. Thank goodness you didn't listen to your own rules then.
Yeah. Past Glenn was awesome. Juju Glenn's a jerk, but I'm talking in third person now. Glenn went to Southeast Asia and Glenn got into all kinds of mischief. No, it was cool because Thailand by that stage had also really ramped up.
Yeah.
I've never been to Bali, so I can't compare notes to you on that one.
Mm-hmm.
So I do own a Bintang singlet, but it's because my friends went there.
That's all there is. It's just Bintang singlets, dirty beaches, and people trying to sell you shit. There you go.
Wow. That sounds awesome.
Yeah.
no, to self, I'm going to Bali.
Yeah, I'm selling it really well, aren't I? But then again, everybody knows who's listened to this podcast. I'm not a really big fan of Bali, but it's just been circumstantial, the reasons that I've been there. But I know people that really love it, and there's definitely places that you can go if you know, I've got a friend who is a mad keen surfer and so is her husband, and they just go there to surf for a cheap holiday to surf, you know. Mind you, they live on the Gold Coast, so it's like, why wouldn't you just stay home and surf? But they do that all year round. So they go to Bali a couple times a year just to surf, and it's cheap. And they don't hit Kuta or anywhere like that. So yeah, fair enough. There's things you can enjoy about Bali, definitely. But it's not my favorite place to be. But I've never been to Thailand, Vietnam or Laos either. So I couldn't tell you. But I hear Thailand and Bali are very similar. So, but Thailand's so much bigger, you know, so there's so much more to it, I think.
I really love Thailand. I actually enjoyed Bangkok. My girlfriend loathes Bangkok. She really didn't have a good time there when she went on her own with her friends.
Mm-hmm.
I actually really enjoyed it because it was like stepping into a National Geographic magazine. So, yeah, there's my geekiness coming out again. Like, most of my mates went over there going, yeah, cheap cocktails. And I'm like, oh, my God, it's like reading 1998 edition of the National Geographic. This is what I've been chasing.
And so in what way? What about it was like that?
So one thing, and it was cool because my uncle had been living there for 5 years, or living in that region for 5 years, working for Intrepid.
Mm-hmm.
So he goes, look, don't take the freeway, because the freeway had just opened up, and that's a big deal in Bangkok. Like, you ask anyone, it's like, it has smashed the traffic really hard, which is good.
Yeah.
But he goes, what are you racing for? Like, this is your first time overseas. See what, like, look at it from ground level.
Yeah.
And I'm really glad he did, because it was cool. Like, it was just chaos. Like, yeah, I take the piss out of a lot of Australian drivers, or just shout out at a lot of Australian drivers, but nothing could have ever prepared me for what I saw. Like, seeing a 3-lane road quickly become a 5-lane road.
Yeah.
That, like, little things like that, or just seeing the different advertisements, or, like, everything was just different.
Different.
Like, just weird different.
Yeah.
And also the novelty of being in a taxi without seatbelts. That was cool.
Yeah. Oh,
yeah.
Gosh.
Just being rogue.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're like, we'd never get away with this in Australia. This is awesome.
Yeah. Well, it was all these little things came together. And, yeah, it was cool. My uncle was saying, like, so Intrepid used the hotel, and I'm not sure if they still do. This is in 2004. Yeah. So things could have changed, but it was where they based their operations out of was near Kosan Road. So I think that's pretty much the closest thing to Kuta, I think, is next to Kosan Road.
Yeah.
But it was cool. Like, it was cool just to sort of start getting a taste of the weirdness that was about to come. So it was madness. We met the rest of the gang, and just crazy adventures. Like, we worked our way up to the north. And look, to be honest, I think we went to Chiang Mai,
mm-hmm.
Which is another massive favorite for tourists, because back then anyway, it was known as what Bangkok used to be.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's probably changed even more since I was last there. So I can't really say what it looks like now.
Mm.
But it was a little bit more traditional, like, still a bit chaotic, great food.
Yeah.
And then we worked our way up to Laos. And then everything I'd come to get used to in Thailand was totally torn apart by going into Laos. And so, like, because Laos is just, it felt like apocalypse now. If anyone's seen Apocalypse Now, yeah, like cruising down the Mekong River, off in these tiny little boats, jungles everywhere,
yeah,
not seeing anything. Like, there was no signs of civilization for the most part of this boat ride. It was 2 days of. I remember vaguely going a little bit crazy on this boat.
Did you get scurvy? No.
Yeah, getting scurvy, start getting jungle fever, start building my own little army, calling myself Colonel Kurtz. Whoa, no, that did not happen. There was no heart of darkness on my adventure. But, yeah, it was cool. Like, I mean, you did see a few Western people.
Yep.
It was starting to build up. It was cool because I got to feed a tiger. Not a drugged up tiger, which is never cool. I don't like that whole concept. But this tiger was actually an orphan, and she had a whole 40 hectare paddock or jungle area for herself. And
wow.
She had her set feeding time. So you'd feed a buffalo steak. And then you got to play with baby sun bears, and that was awesome. Mm. So it was like this, it was just so much fun.
Yeah. Is this the trip where you were drinking Cobra rice wine?
Yeah. Wow. That's rocket fuel.
I bet.
So for those that aren't aware, I helped with a blog earlier, and yes, there was Cobra rice wine. So there was bottles of, like, non-labeled homemade rice wine.
Wow.
And I'm pretty sure Formula Ones could use the alcohol that was used in these. It was just... it was just burnt.
Yeah.
Like, it just burnt your mouth. And I was like, oh, my God, I couldn't. And they gave you free samples. I'm like, why would I want more than one free sample? And there are two Scotsmen on my tour.
Oh,
and right. Now, I'd never met Scottish people. Like, I thought Scottish people were all like Hamish Macbeth. They were not. They were not Hamish Macbeth. They were from Aberdeen. And yeah. They were oil workers. And they were like, oh, come on, Pookstu. And, like, imagine that with a proper Scottish accent. Yeah. And I'm like, fine, I'll have a few with you guys. This is all free. This is in a street. And they were like, no way, we're going to drink the Cobra whiskey. And I'm like, oh, Cobra wine. I'm like, oh, I'll drink the Cobra wine. I'll show you lot.
They I'm drank from Ipswich, bruh.
So, yeah, I did five or eight. No, I did eight shots, and wow. They did 20.
Oh, my gosh.
And they were sick. That was a big night.
I bet.
And that pretty much that whole trip was big nights. It was a lot of big nights, but it was just mental. I look back now going, I get nervous going into a sketchy-looking pub. Why the hell would I go drink off in a street?
Things you do when you're traveling, hey, you get a whole new – I was listening to a podcast actually yesterday, and it's called Wild Ideas Worth Living. And one of the guests was saying, like, when you travel, you get a really pared back, more honest version of yourself, which I would have thought maybe would have been the opposite. Like, people put on a certain persona when they're traveling. But I thought about it and I thought, no, I think she's right. Like, everyone doesn't know you. Anything that you wear at home doesn't matter. And you really just do what you want to do. And obviously you take more risks, I guess, because it's exciting, and you don't have people around that know you that are going to judge you or tell you you shouldn't be doing it. And so I think a lot of people do stuff they would never do when they're traveling.
Yeah. Oh, like, yeah, it was, I guess there was a bit of guidance because my uncle was there, but definitely when he wasn't around, I sort of I got a little bit more adventurous, I guess.
Yeah.
Like, I still was pretty adventurous. Like, I fed a tiger.
Yeah.
I don't like cats, so what the hell would I feed a tiger for? Like, but it was cool. Yeah.
I bet it was cool.
And also, another thing, like, you got a hint that I may be a bit nerdy, but I was also a Sunday school teacher in a previous life. So we're
no
now
way.
Talking about a kid who has just left school barely 2 years earlier, and will finish school 2 years earlier, and has gone from going to church every Sunday, and now he's drinking rice wine in the street. So, yeah.
I didn't know that about you. There you go.
Kept it quiet because you guys would have beat me up. I mean, the other people, not you, because you're always nice to me.
Yes.
I think.
Yeah, I think for the most part. I have very little memory of high school, but I don't think I was an asshole. I hope not.
We talked about Gert Arman a lot. That was pretty cool.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Showing again, kids off that younger than us.
Mm.
Gert Arman was the the end character of, not even the end character, end titles character, I guess.
Yeah.
For Buffy.
For Buffy, yeah. The little shot that comes on at the end after all the credits.
Tough name. We just called him Gert Arman. And That was a thing.
We're really showing our age now, for sure.
I'm tagging out now. So that was cool. That was actually, and like, there was more adventures. Like, it was like we went through Vietnam and Cambodia, and it was just loose.
Mm.
And it kind of set me up for a really, like, a bit more of a freer time. Because, like, I went to Christmas Island. Okay, that's not actually all that exciting, but I kind of was. Whereas a lot of the guys hit the pub straight away when we got shore leave, I actually was more inclined to explore the island and see Christmas Island, not from the certain detention centres on the other side of the island, but I saw it from as like a tourist perspective.
Yeah.
So I actually went snorkeling. There's really nice coral reefs at Christmas Island. It's a shame people don't get to see them as much.
Yeah.
They're really cool. So that was part of my little adventure, like one of the other adventures. And people are like, oh, why didn't you come drinking with us? I'm like, well, I did a lot of that just 6 months earlier. So I'm quite happy to actually retain some memories of this.
Yeah. And actually want to get up in the morning and go and do stuff the next day.
Yeah. Hangovers suck.
Yeah.
Not that, again, future past Glenn, but future Glenn from then was going to find out the hard way how much of an idiot he was. Because I then went over to the Middle East.
Yeah, tell us more about that.
So, Middle East, it's hot.
No shit!
who'd thought? But 58 degrees one day.
Oh, that's nuts, even for Australia. Yeah.
Yeah, and it was humid. Yeah, not dry, as everyone goes, oh, at least it's dry heat in the desert. No, it is not dry in the North Arabian Gulf. It is hot. It's humid. It's dusty. It's gross. And it's so weird. So I was this is 3 years after that trip to the Middle East, to Southeast Asia.
Yeah.
So I was still feeling pretty like, yeah, I'm prepared for this. And I wasn't. I guess because it was a war zone as well. So I guess you can't really prepare yourself for a war zone until you actually go into a war zone, I guess.
Yeah. How could you possibly know? Yeah.
Like, I didn't see combat, so I can't compare my trip to the guys who went to the GAN or actually hit the streets of Baghdad or what have you. Like, that, those guys saw stuff that I can't even comprehend.
Yeah.
So, and respect to those guys. But it was still so weird. Like, so you've got uber wealth all around you. So the Gulf states, for those that aren't aware, include Iran, but they don't consider themselves Arabic. They consider themselves Persian, and they speak Farsi, which is not Arabic. Then you've got Iraq and Kuwait, but Iraq doesn't have a coastline, so that's why. No, it does have a coastline, but it's only 30 kilometers long and no ports, so that's why they invaded Kuwait to get their ports. But because Kuwait took rightly got their land back, the Iraqis had these enormous oil terminals, and we'll come back to them in a moment. And then there's like the, so you've got Saudi Arabia, so that's one of the big Gulf states, Qatar, the United Arab Emirates, which consists of seven Emirates, not just Abu Dhabi and Dubai. There's a lot of other things there. Bahrain, which is Bahrain.
Where you nearly got shot by US Marines.
That's where I almost got shot.
Please elaborate for our keen listeners. I'm sure they'd like to know how you nearly got shot in Bahrain.
Alright, so smart traveller was not me. my friend and I, she was my boss. And so you think that your boss should be a good supervisor. So, hey Kaz, if you're listening, love you, but you almost got me dead. So we hitched a ride with these Royal Marines. We'd normally hitched rides with our own crew, but these nice Royal Marines were like, you want to hitch a ride with us? I'm like, yeah, no worries. And instead of using the back gate like we were meant to do, we used the front gate. And what I didn't realize at the front, at this front gate, it had a nice big, in big, warm, welcoming letters. Saying, welcome to Naval Support Activity Bahrain. I'm like, that's so awesome. Like, how friendly is that? I went, Kaz, strike a pose and I'll take a photo of you. So I took a photo of her and I went, oh, no, we need to be a bit closer. Let's get a bit closer. So I got her to take another photo. And before even my finger hit the shutter, just out of nowhere, just hear this, man with the camera, stand down. Man with the camera, stand the fuck down. That's so for me. Oh, you just know when it's directed at you. And this was a square, like a courtyard. I can't even tell you what was on the sides of the courtyard. I guess because like it was adrenaline just punched through. You just get tunnel vision.
Yeah.
And all I knew, I just focused all my eyesight just focused on exactly where that came from.
Yeah.
And the sound, like any person who's seen a movie knows exactly what shotguns and automatic rifles sound like getting actioned. And it just echoed. And this courtyard just cleared out. Like it was like the parting of the Red Sea. And there was just Kaz and I just standing in the middle looking like absolute dickheads. Like I'm just sitting there going, this is a really bad day. And they sent a Gurkha out. So Yanks, they can shoot you from their base, but they couldn't walk out off the base with their weapons. So what they did was they hired private contractors because that's one way of getting around legal issues, like the American way.
Yep.
And they used a Gurkha. Now, for those who don't know what a Gurkha is the toughest soldiers of the British Army. Like they're normal soldiers, but they're recruited from Nepal. And it's crazy history that the British Army still recruits soldiers from Nepal. And they have whole regiments of these guys. And so Even when they retire, they're highly desirable as security guards or private contractors. And in this case, they sent one out. The other thing that they carry, other than a service rifle, is an awesome dagger called a Kukri.
Mm-hmm.
And even though it's officially meant for show, it's not just for show. So this Gurkha's come over carrying his automatic rifle, one hand on that, but he definitely had his hand on his Kukri ready to rock and roll. So pretty much guns for show, knives for a pro. And
wow, I love that.
Yeah.
We're going to have to just call that, call this episode guns for show, knives for a pro.
that sums up that day. The other thing that they're famous for is smiling in the face of danger.
Mm.
Like any time, whether it's in World War II, Afghanistan 1, 2, 3, 4,
mm-hmm.
They've always been renowned for smiling in the face of the enemy. And he was smiling.
Oh, so
and I'm
creepy.
Like, wow. I'm getting everything about the Gurkhas from the pointy end. This is not how my day was meant to turn out. So, yes, I got apprehended by a Gurkha. He sent both my boss and myself to the nice Americans. They were not impressed. They were like, are you guys insane? Like, we were ready to kill you. And I'm like, oh, I got that gist pretty quickly. and I was shaking so bad.
Yeah.
Then just to make it worse, my boss, she's tall, blonde hair, blue-eyed. She's quite pretty.
Mm-hmm.
And they told me to make sure that my Russian hooker friend was kept by my side at all times. She was also a member of the Australian Navy.
Wow.
So she really appreciated being called that.
Mm. Oh, my gosh.
Wow. So that day escalated so quickly. Like, it was just like, I just wanted to go to the PX store and buy some clothes. Like, and, yeah, that's America. Like, if you did that in Australia, an Australian sailor would come over and probably go, mate, what are you doing?
Yeah.
Like, delete that photo. You don't be an idiot.
Yeah.
The Americans, they just unleash the firepower of the United States at you.
Yeah.
And it's just, but why?
It's safe to say they take themselves a little bit seriously.
they're America. So
trigger happy.
That was the most life-threatening experience I had in the Middle East, was a bit of naivety, a little bit of adventure, and then it just went all crazy really, really, really quickly. But yeah, that was my Middle East experience. Was like this weird mix of everything you want to see in a war movie. Like, you get helicopters, there was boat trips where you like guns and stuff. If you're into that sort of thing, it's really, really exciting. There's this weirdness of oil terminals everywhere. Like, we were protecting these on oil rigs. So we were protecting these two enormous metal structures. Like, they looked so much like out of Waterworld. another really bad 90s reference, kids. I can't explain how bad that movie is, and yet how spot on that description of these oil terminals actually is as well. And they were just massive metal structures. So if you want to Google web ABOT or KOT, KAAOT, you'll get a rough idea how big these things are.
Mm.
And we were protecting them. And it was just, we were just doing racetracks around them, like just constantly going backwards and forwards, doing circle work and stuff. But it was just bizarre. Like, at nighttime, you could see the lights or like all the oil rigs light up, like the flames from the top of the exhausts, or you could see the lights of the Iranians, because we were very close to the Iranian coastline there. And it was just this weird experience. Like, it was just, yeah, it's really bizarre. Because you can't see much during the day. It's all dusty. It's really hazy. We were in a sandstorm for 3 days. Like, the sandstorm, in the movies, you hear a sandstorm and there was like roaring wind and everything.
Yeah.
It found it was actually deathly silent. Like, everything gets muted. You couldn't even hear the engine noise very well. You couldn't see anything further than 100 meters.
Mm.
It was just, bizarre.
Yeah.
And that was my day two of our time actually on patrol, and this is what we've just been hit by. And it's just this weird experience that none of us really prepared for.
Yeah.
And thankfully it wasn't too bad in terms of the unseen enemy, I guess, but it was a very stressful trip. Again, I won't go too much into it, but unfortunately that we saw what happens with a breakdown of leadership, and that's, yeah, we won't go into that, but yeah, it was interesting.
Because if you tell us, you'll have to kill us, basically.
Yeah, pretty much, yeah. Or someone will do it for me, you know, I've got friends.
Yeah.
but no, because of the stresses of what's going on, like even though we didn't get into contact with the enemy,
mm-hmm.
I guess with everything that was going on, we forged really strong friendships with, like, I didn't make a lot of friends on that trip, but the friends that I've made are lifelong friends. So, yeah, that was just this, yeah, it's a very bizarre world. Like, you're in the heart of Australia, I feel like. I feel like all the points of the Australian compass are all combined onto this boat. You've got strong personalities everywhere. So, I guess, yeah, having that, like, you feeling like you're still in Australia, and then you walk outside and you go, nah. what is this insanity?
We're not in Kansas anymore, Toto.
Yeah, and they actually made that joke to an American, and they're like, I'm actually from Texas. It's like, I get that, but you know, Kansas, and they're like, no, I don't get it.
And that's the sound of a joke going straight over a Texan's head.
Yes, exactly. So yeah, it was just yeah, it was a bizarre world. Like, it was just, I don't know, like, if you watch, it's not like what I expected, and yet it was. Yeah, but it was cool. Like, you come home, like, the ports, like, everything over there is brown, whether they wanted to or not, everything was brown. Like, Dubai had there was this dustiness all over the glass and everything, and that's just by virtue of living in a desert.
Yeah.
So when we sailed home into Sydney Harbour, it was pretty awesome. You don't, like, people say, oh, we don't have enough trees in Sydney. And yet when we sailed in, it was the greenest thing I'd seen in 6 months. It was insane. And if those living in Sydney go, come off it, you're kidding. It's like, no, it's very green compared to what we saw.
Yeah, totally.
Because we also went to India, and that was a weird experience because it's Mumbai. And you either love Mumbai or you hate Mumbai.
Yeah, I've heard that a few times.
I hated it for day one. Yeah. I went in there, I was really excited, and it just turned to shit. It was just like there was just rampant corruption, rampant, what are homeless kids over there? Beggars.
Yeah.
Actually, around that time, a little movie called Slumdog Millionaire had come out.
Mm-hmm.
We hadn't seen it because we'd been in the Middle East. You're shut off from Australia when you're over there. Like, you're 6 months, you've gone into a time capsule. You come to Australia and you know things have changed.
Yeah.
So this movie had come and gone. We were like, I have no idea what, I don't know what's going on. So we weren't prepared for the disfigured children. We weren't prepared for what we're about to see. And it just was this massive culture shock, like from the relative sterility within the ship.
Yeah.
To this, it just hit you for six, like raw sewage in the gutters.
So
I had a really bad start to it, and I was really hesitant about leaving the ship again.
Mm-hmm.
And thankfully I did. One of my friends said, come on, we're going on a bus tour. And I actually got a really huge respect for Mumbai. I haven't been back since, but I'll happily go back because it was chaos. It was chaos, but it was cool. I also like drinking Kingfisher beer, so that's pretty cool. And I really love Indian food. Mm. Oddly enough, though, the places that we were told are the safest to go, 1 month later, if those can remember, the Mumbai terrorist attacks hit exactly those places that we were told were the safest places to go.
Really?
So, like, Leopold's Cafe, which was one of the the hardest hit, other than the Taj Mahal Hotel, was nailed hard. Yeah. And so that kind of shook us a little bit when we were back in Australia. Like 2 weeks after, 4 weeks after we left there, we were at a pub, and bit by bit we started hearing how bad things had hit. Like literally Mumbai was put into, was under siege. And we're talking about a city of 22 million people.
Yeah.
And a whole city got put under siege. So
it's the entire population of Australia at the time.
Yeah.
You know, and then some.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's insane.
And we were just, we all kind of were a bit dumbfounded by it, because everyone was like, once those that liked it saw that it was relatively at peace with itself.
Mm-hmm.
It has a strong culture. Like you've got like huge amount of both Muslim and Hindu religions that were at the time coexisting happily.
Yep.
You've got political figures of Gandhi came from there and resided there for most of his life. Incidentally, he was a medic in the Boer War, so, yeah, peace out to Gandhi. Yeah.
There you go.
And then he became a lawyer. So it was really cool, and it was really sad to see, like, this city of so many people, and then it just turned to fire and blood, and you're like, what is going on? Like, and it can't be that unpopular, because Sachin Tendulkar still lives there, or he lived there at the time, and that he was bigger than the president of India. That's how big a cricketer he was.
Yeah.
And he was living. So for this to happen was just insanity.
It was kind of
a big shake up for a lot of us.
Mm.
But I'm really glad I went there before all that went down.
Yeah.
Because I found it pretty cool.
Yeah.
And yeah, I had a really great experience there in the end. So the Navy had this bizarre way of taking us to the weirdest places and yet kind of exciting places.
Yeah.
Like, I've been to the Solomon Islands, I've been to Vanuatu and New Caledonia with the Navy since then. I've been to this tiny little island. If you want to look up on the internet, I don't even know if there's actual photos of this little island called Wilson's Island.
Yeah.
And the only reason why I can remember that name is because that came up on Facebook today, like as a memory.
Oh, right.
And we're like, oh, wow, I completely forgot the name of that place. And it's literally an island populated by 3 Australian scientists.
Yeah.
And if they're for 6 months and before they get changed out, they don't see any outsiders until the next change of shift.
Yeah.
And otherwise, it's just populated by seabirds and turtles.
So are they studying the wildlife?
It's a meteorology station. Mm-hmm. So they are pretty much like the front line for cyclones.
Right.
So they've got a really fun job when cyclones hit. Yeah.
Oh, shit, hit the red button. Let's get the fuck out of here.
Where can we go? We just go to our beds.
Yeah.
And that's pretty much what it came down to. Like, they were there for Cyclone Yasi, and they were just like, all we could do is just go to bed and just wait for it to blow over. Boom, boom.
Yeah. Pun intended.
I'm here all week, guys. Yeah. But yeah, it was just bizarre, because like we came in, like there was only 36 people on board this boat, and there was another boat with us, and we literally repopulated this tiny little island by 3 to 72, like 500%. There we go. This is why I didn't pass maths. I can't even use statistics properly. And it was cool. Like, it's to this day, I still look back and go, that was cool. Like, that was a really fun little adventure.
Yeah.
Like a good Australian, I had had my slip-on shoes. I had my cargo pants on, because cargo pants are still fashionable.
And you'd wear them even if they weren't.
I love cargo pants. I wear glasses. Yeah. one of the girls on the trip hated it because, as it turned out, she was terrified of seabirds.
Oh, God.
So if you don't like birds, you really don't like birds that are really protective of their babies and their nests, do not go to that island.
Yeah, if you don't like plovers, you're not going to like Wilson's Island.
No. So, yeah, that was cool. Like, it was just this, like, we literally walked the entire island in about 20 minutes. And it was cool.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed it. But yeah. My mates were like, yeah, nah, this place can go eat it.
Each to their own. But it's fair to say, I guess, the Navy really, like, you had your trip to Asia with your uncle, but really, like, you got to see some batshit crazy places with the Navy. It really kind of probably opened your eyes more than would have happened if you'd never joined, right?
Oh, yeah, big time.
Yeah.
Would I have stayed in Ipswich if I didn't join up? Oh, I don't know. Like, that's
it. Who knows?
You know, that still scares me, that thought.
Yeah, I know. It occurs to me sometimes too. How many illegitimate children would I have by now if I'd stayed?
Well, the question is, would I have had a girlfriend? Because I definitely did not have any girlfriends in Ipswich. So there's another thought.
Go somewhere. Go somewhere where they don't know I'm not cool.
To Germany, yes. Would you have stayed in Ipswich if you hadn't had that opportunity to bust out?
Yeah, I don't know. I guess you make your own luck, right? Like, I specifically applied to uni for this random obscure double degree that they'd only just started doing on the Gold Coast because I wanted to get away and go see something, and I'm really glad that I did. Because for me, like, and I've spoken about this before on the podcast, but like, travel in my family was not even a thing. It was, there was no, the word, like the phrase gap year didn't mean anything. My parents didn't travel. Dad did later on, but like, you know, it still wasn't much of a thing. So the idea that I could, you know, take time off and go and travel, or that was just, it wouldn't have even occurred to me, I don't think, if I hadn't moved and then met different kind of people from move. And not that far. Like, the Gold Coast is only an hour away, but it's a totally different atmosphere. And, yeah, life would have been very, very different, needless to say, if I hadn't moved. But it's hard to say what would happen if you stay there, I think. But, you know, it's safe to say I think a lot of people who didn't leave Ipswich straight after school are still there and haven't left ever.
Yeah, if you're listening, this could be a bit of a jibe, but yeah, I remember, I can't imagine this individual actually listening, so I think I'm safe. But one of the particularly nasty people at school who thought that they had the world sorted in grade 9, she got pregnant in year 12. I don't know if you remember this person, but she thought she was going to be a lawyer.
Yeah.
And also she was dancing, so she thought that she was going to subsidise her legal studies by dancing.
Yeah.
And, hey, look, by the way, if you do have kids at school, not having a go at you because things happen.
Yeah.
But this particular person thought she was better than everyone else, and then she was brought down to earth very quickly.
Yeah.
And my mate, David Ward, who also, I think, was he in the back of our class with us?
No, I'm the wrong person to ask. My memory is very fuzzy.
but he was another schoolmate of ours, and he had actually ended up joining the Air Force as well.
Yeah.
And we both caught up, and we were both looking pretty trendy because I had this amazing thing called cash. So, yeah, make it rain, baby. And, I'll never speak homie G again. But we were walking through Bouvelle Fair.
Oh, God.
And we were just, like, just being lads, I guess. Mm. And we bumped into this particular individual. And granted, I still wasn't too impressed with the way she talked to me in school. I thought she was quite awful.
Mm.
But I was I was prepared to bury the hatchet, and I called out to said person, going, "Hi, insert name.
Yeah.
I'm really glad to see you.
Yeah.
No, it's been a real time. What's been happening?" And she literally took one look at me, glanced up and down on me.
Yeah.
and then literally did a full 180 degrees and turned the other way, or walked the other way.
What?
And I'm like, wow. Yeah, are we playing this game still?
Yeah.
Like, okay, so as it turns out, I also carry a grudge. so, hey, if you're listening to this, insert person, and if you remember this, but yeah. I certainly do.
Yeah. Fuck you.
Yeah, shout out to you.
Oh, fuck.
There was another time, and this one's actually a pretty unusual situation. So, I went home because Dad was dying. For those not in the know, Dad died of a particularly virulent cancer called renal cell carcinoma. There is apparently there's been one or two people who've gone into remission with this condition, but like brain cancer, pretty much once you get it, it's good night the fox. And in Dad's case, he lasted 12 months, and that was it. Mm. So, yeah, try not to be a downer because Dad was pretty chipper throughout most of it.
Yeah.
I suppose when you're on morphine, I guess things make you pretty cool as well.
Yeah. You're pretty happy when you're on morphine, yeah.
Yeah. This is a man who was very anti-drugs all his life.
Yeah.
And then he just went from drinking beer to taking Endone.
You know what's funny? My dad was as well. Mind you, I think him and my stepmom probably smoked a few jazz cigarettes in their day when they were younger. But, you know, straighty 180 kind of guy. And when he had cancer and he just couldn't eat, and my stepmom came to Joel and said, "Can you get me some weed so your dad can smoke it and so he'll eat?" And it worked. And he ate like a pig that one time. It's quite funny, what? Like coming to my husband, like, "Hey, can you hook us up with some drugs?" And of course, she didn't ask me because I would have been like, "What the fuck? What? I don't know how to get that for you." But Joel's like, "I'll hook you up. I'll hook you up to father-in-law."
That's awesome.
Hilarious. Hilarious. And I think the first time, look, you'll have to excuse me. I'm very uncool and I don't understand the difference. But either they cut it with tobacco the first time and it made him sick, although he's a heavy smoker, so maybe it's the other way around. However they gave it to him the first time, they told him they were giving it to him and it made him feel really sick, like it didn't work. And then the next time I think Joel left her with a little bit and said, you know, just try this again. And the next time she gave it to him, she didn't tell him and he just smoked it. So he must have been so sick he just assumed it was a cigarette and his senses were probably so dulled he didn't realize. Or he played dumb anyway. And then he had the massive munchies after that and it totally worked.
Hey, that's a win.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, which I just find that hilarious. As straighty 180 as I am, I think that's hilarious. So,
was offered it. Well, not mum was offered it because that would actually be kind of funny.
Yeah.
But mum was offered from a mutual friend or something, one of our friends from home, and she said, "Why don't we roll Peter a joint?"
Yeah.
And mum told me this after he died, like it'd been about 6 months after he died, and she still whispered it in my ear in Sydney. And I looked at her and I'm like around my mates from the Navy and I'm not saying my mates are drug takers, but we're pretty open-minded. We're like, "Mum, it's okay." Dad was dying. So pretty much looking back now, I reckon we should have done a lot more.
Yeah, whatever helps, hey, honestly.
Well, the thing is, Dad would never have accepted it because Dad only smoked 3 cigars in his entire life.
Mm.
And I mean only 3 cigars. He smoked all 3 of them in one hit. And that turned him off smoking for the rest of his life. So I look back now and gone, I don't know, mate, because mum's really good at baking, like really cool stuff, and Dad lived for mum's baking. I look back now and gone, why didn't we lace the
brownies?
Brownies.
That seems obvious, right?
And the nurses wouldn't have had a clue, and it would have been awesome.
Yeah.
And I look back going, man, why didn't we do that? Yeah. It would have been so much more relaxed.
Yeah, totally. And, well, I guess in the next few years in Australia, it might actually be a legitimate treatment option because that we're now finally doing trials, which is just ridiculous that it's taken so long. But
look out, Australia.
Whoa. Yeah. Watch out. Anyway, back to your story. Sorry. So you went home.
And we went to one of the X-ray clinics in Ipswich.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a really weird clinic. It's a radiography center. Yet it's in an a country Queensland house.
Yeah, right.
Like, it literally, it's just a, it's outside St. Andrew's Hospital.
Mm-hmm.
And even I look back on, that is the weirdest radiography center. Like, okay, I'm a bit spoiled because I'm in the was in the military where we get top-notch medical treatment.
Mm.
But this was in a, like, a house. I'm like, this is so weird. So Dad was there getting MRIs, and we went to realize that a week later he'd be sent to palliative care for the last few days of his life. We didn't realize how bad things actually were.
Yeah.
But we were there, and there was another girl from school. And it was kind of weird because, look, I'm actually going to say her name this time. Her name was Amy. I don't know if you remember her.
Amy who?
McDonald.
Yes. Yeah.
So I'm going to admit I was a bit of a dick around her. I may have had a crush on her, and I think she knew that. I'm very awkward around girls. I don't know if you knew that. I think I'm awkward around girls.
No
notice
judgment.
How I'm still
no
saying
comment.
That in present tense because it's true. So I kind of, when I got a bit older, I realized, yeah, you don't have a hope in hell because she hates you. So I kind of just never thought much of it after school. Like, I just kind of started staying friends with you and a few others.
Mm.
And then she was actually sitting across from me at the clinic. And I kind of noticed her, and I was kind of like, hang on, I think I know you.
Yeah. And granted, for listeners, this has been a long time between, like, having seen her. So it's understandable that you'd be like, is that her? I don't know.
Yeah, and I was kind of, awkward Glenn engaged. and I'm not saying that I was going to hit her up because I've got my girlfriend still, Nicole.
Yeah.
But it was kind of like this recognition. I'm like, I think I know you. And it was kind of cool because Dad's personality really lightened up as he was dying.
And my dad too, yeah.
It was kind of cool because he came out and we weren't being obnoxious, but we were kind of being a little bit arrogant with each other. And we were both talking really loud because I literally just come off the plane and went straight to see Dad.
Yeah.
And so I was kind of like had this bravado attitude. I've come from Sydney. I'm from the Big Smoke. Yeah. Check this guy out. And it was kind of cool because she looked at me and there wasn't this flash of annoyance that I was kind of expecting from her. It was kind of this, he's here with his dad. Mm. That's kind of cool. We didn't say hello, but I like to think, look, if you're listening, Amy, I think you're still, I think you're cool. Because you didn't. But it was kind of cool because it wasn't like this, oh, God, I can't believe this guy's still an idiot.
Yeah, the loathing that you got from the other unnamed person. She who shall not be named. I know exactly who you're talking about too.
Yes, yeah. Excellent. And it was kind of cool because we were both sort of like had this, you know that meme that's going on at the moment where it's like your friend shouts you a beer from the other side of the room and it's like this gif of a guy just like a bearded guy and he just sort of nods his head.
Yeah.
And it was kind of like that. Yeah. I'm like, yeah, that was, I'm really happy about that. So that was a very long-winded story for something that lasted all of 5 minutes, but it kind of sums up everything that was going on with Dad and my life, how much it had turned around. Like, I wasn't intimidated by it, but it was kind of like, I see you, you see me.
Yeah.
We got this. And it was kind of cool.
Yeah.
And Dad also noticed it because Dad was a massive flirt. Yeah. And he's just like, we walked out and he said it a little bit loud. I'm like, you idiot, Dad. But it was kind of like, she knew you, didn't she? I'm like, yes, Dad, she knew me. And he's like, she's pretty hot, you know. I'm like, and he had no idea about this backstory. And I'm like, yeah, she is pretty hot.
Thanks,
and
Dad.
I just, by this stage, awkward Glenn had engaged and was like, yeah, I'm just going to just dig a massive hole for myself. So, hey, Amy, look, hope your ankle's getting better. I think it was your ankle, but you had a big cast on. So, shout out to you.
Shout out to Amy.
My girlfriend, like, to this day, she goes, you're an idiot. You and your dad, like, you were in a somber situation and you two were just like being lads. I'm like, yeah, we were.
Yeah. that's the best. And that's one of the last things you got to do with him. And that's pretty funny.
Yeah. It was cool. Would have been better if there was beer.
Yeah, definitely. That's the only way that could have been better. Yeah.
Don't know if the radiography clinic would improve, but yeah. Again, it is, which anything can go.
Oh, that's it. You just never know.
Yeah. Well. And it's really freaky because I happily tell people that I'm from Ipswich down here. Like, if you can't hide from your past, as one Tyrion Lannister would say, you just make an armor out of it.
Yeah, there you go.
And people were like, oh, you're old mayor. He's in jail now. I was like, yeah.
And everybody loved that dude.
Yes, my mom is so upset by that. and then people are like, why do they keep spelling it as Pisasale? Like, they pronounce it as Pisale. And it's like, it's a silent saw.
Yeah, like Palaszczuk. No one can spell Palaszczuk. It's Polish. I can spell it.
Going down there. That's I don't even know if people call her that down here. I think they're just like the Queensland Premier.
Yeah, well, Gladys Berejiklian's not much better.
Wow, you are well informed. Not many. I didn't think you guys would have heard of her.
Well, I am an ABC avid listener and watcher and a bit of a news nerd. So.
Okay, fair enough. Yeah. She lived around the corner from me. It was kind of cool.
Oh, there you go.
I was in her little electorate. So, yeah, because I'm a North Shore snob, so I'm scared of leaving the North Shore.
All right, yeah. Well, we're pretty much out of time, but...
Sure, sorry.
No, lots of reminiscing, which is excellent. A bit of information for people who don't know what it's like to be in the Navy. Long and short of it is it's batshit crazy, basically, which is cool. If you want to see some crazy shit, then maybe that's for you. But then there's probably a lot of reasons that it's not, but we can get into that another time, maybe on a different kind of podcast.
Yes.
But you're not with the Navy anymore. So let's wrap it up and let people know what you're doing now. What's life like now for the awkward around girls, Glenn from high school, who was super cool in the Navy, now lives on the North Shore. What are you up to these days?
Yeah, well, I live in the little suburb of Marsfield. Mm-hmm. It's next to Macquarie Uni, which makes Macquarie Dictionaries. So,
I did not know that. Sounds obvious.
I'm not sure if kids still get Macquarie Dictionaries at school.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so that's my – I like to use that as a bit of a point of reference. But, yeah, I do – I make coffees for people in Mossman, which is kind of cool. It overlooks North and South Head, so it's a really nice cafe. So come in into Burnt Orange. It's really nice. I make really good smoothies. Oh, just throwing it out there.
There you go. North Shore people do love their smoothies.
Yes. North Shore snobs. Let's call us by our correct name. My girlfriend's from the Northern Beaches, and she's just like, you're such an idiot. And it's like, no, you're kidding. Like, you Northern Beaches girls, you're just as bad. But
anyway, we're very territorial in Australia, aren't we?
I realise Australians hate other cities. And it took an American to make me realise this. It's like, oh, Brisbane. Fucking Jesus, Brisbane. Yeah. Why do you want to go there?
And I hate Sydney.
See? There you go. And I bet you hate Melbourne as well.
No, I love Melbourne. I love Melbourne.
What? but I also do speech pathology on during the weekdays.
Yeah, amazing.
So it's really cool. So I help with kids who are so I actually had to go to speech pathology. So it's actually kind of cool to be able to help kids get through that.
Mm.
And it's kind of fun. I had to learn. I had a kid ask me, why does a question mark look like a question mark?
Mm-hmm.
And I just looked at it and I just had this blank face of, I have no idea. And then I looked it up. And it was kind of cool because it took a kid to make me have to learn a bit more.
Mm-hmm.
And for those who are really interested now,
why does a question mark look like a question mark?
Yeah, well, hear your voice there. Did you hear it at the end how it goes a little bit up
mm-hmm.
in the question?
Mm-hmm.
That's so back in days of old, people were like, oh, that sounds like as though you've been struck by lightning. Seriously. And so they made a little lightning mark next to the question. And then that. And as time goes on, because the English language is the laziest and the most retarded language, mm-hmm. It became a squiggle. And wow. The squiggle became a question mark.
Wow, there you go. We learned something today, people.
And it's crazy because I told her this and she's like, I have no idea what you're on about. And she, because, you know, in the space of a week, she's gone through a lifetime already. She's 7 years old. Mm. And here's me like, I looked that up for you. But all the parents are like, thanks for telling us that. That's really cool. I'm like, yeah, that's right. Yeah. So awkward, nerdy Glenn is still nerdy, still awkward, but a little bit more drunk.
Yeah, and a little bit more well-traveled, say the least.
Risky business here.
Yeah, well, that's what we're all about, rule breaking and risk taking. So I think you fit the bill for one of our close-knit community of people doing stupid things overseas.
Yeah.
For the most
part.
Well, thank you.
I didn't even dabble into Europe. Oh, geez.
Oh, yeah, we need a whole nother couple of podcasts to cover all of the shit you've done. Yeah. We'll get you back again soon, but we're going to have to let our listeners go after. They probably really need a toilet break. So, and I may or may not be talking about myself. So we'll get you back soon and we'll have to cover a few more of the insane-o things that you've done.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for being with us. All right.
Thanks to Glenn for being with me for that interview. That was great fun. Thanks to you listeners if you managed to hang on all the way through that and listening to our ramblings and reminiscings. We'll catch you for the next episode. Chat soon.